I'm really honored.
And we're back on the Bigfoot Pro Wrestling Podcast with Podcast Guy.
We are leaving the station! L Train, take us out!
Be talking to some of the fans up in the Pacific Northwest.
Lyle, thanks for having me, man.
This is the L Train. Let's leave the station.
Pretty good, darling. Pretty good.
The Bash Brothers.
Your demigod of death. Buy my shit.
Yo! We're the Voros twins.
They know me by PCO.
I've got my Chinese food and some cheesecake, and I'm gonna go pig out
to the horror show.
Freaking me out, man.
Freaking me out, yo!
Yo, 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 this is the L Train, and this is the Bigfoot Pro Wrestling Podcast, episode 161. 161, baby. How's everyone doing? Hope everyone's okay. Hope everyone's staying safe. You know, like I've been kind of saying every week, man, keep safe, keep those masks on, you know, do your part, social distancing. The better we can all do, the sooner, hopefully, we can get things going back to the way they were and have, you know, wrestling shows and go out to restaurants and get haircuts and, you know, manicures and pedis and all that kind of good stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. We got to deal with it and just kind of hang out, do our thing, and wait. And hopefully it'll get going in the right direction, I hope. I hope everyone had a great Mother's Day. I know we did around here. Had a couple really good days. We did go to Cle Elum to the in-laws' house. We stood outside, barbecued, kept our social distancing, used masks. And not only was it Mother's Day, or wait, before I say any more, had a great Mother's Day there. My father-in-law did some grilling. We did some chicken, and it came out fabulous. And then the next day for Mother's Day here for the Mrs. Clams, son and I, we grilled up some fillets in the evening out on the grill. Charcoal, by the way, no propane in this house. And then we did some corn on the cob, and then I had got a nice bottle of Mrs. Clam's favorite Pinot Noir. And then we just had a great evening, man. I hope all the mothers, you know, were all treated right, you know. All you guys took care of the ladies, your moms, your wives, your grandmas, you know, the next door neighbor that took care of you when you're a kid, you know, all that kind of stuff, though. And anyway, had a great weekend, and it was really, really, really fun. And then what I was going to say is also want to congratulate my in-laws on their 50th anniversary, their 50th wedding anniversary, 50 years of marriage. So congratulations to them. They're incredible people, Colin and Susie. They've treated me like a family member the first day I walked into their house. And let me just tell you a story real quick. The first time I had ever met Mrs. Clam's parents, Christmas Day. I was invited to Christmas Day dinner. So, you know, how comfortable is that? But we pulled it off because they were super cool, and I really had a great time. And like I said, they've treated me like family since that day I walked in. And then, you know, I know they got many, many more to come. I don't know how many anniversaries they're going to get to, but it's going to be a whole lot more than 50. I'll tell you that right now, man. So, you know what? Let's just kind of get to things. Before we get to the show this week, you know, let me tell you about the next couple shows that we're going to have here. This coming Thursday, I am going to drop a bonus episode. So you're going to get two episodes this week. This bonus episode coming up on Thursday, you're going to get Sebastian Wolf and Miles DeVille, State of Emergency. They are back, badder than ever. And we're going to talk about some stuff. We talk about some TV shows we all get into. We talk about how we feel about the empty arena wrestling shows that are on TV. You know, a few other things, and then we eventually get to the Bagamania series, Bagamania 3. You know, it's history, and, you know, it was so much fun watching that, you know, when you ain't got much else to really do, and then Sebastian and Miles are putting on this show for us on the internet. So we kind of get into that, and then those guys make a big announcement. So this Thursday, tune in to the Bigfoot Pro Wrestling Podcast. And check that out and find out the scoop before it hits the airwaves and the social media waves and then everyone in the world knows. So anyway, that drops this Thursday. And then next Monday, I'm going to be talking to the ones, the only. I've talked to them each before separately on this podcast. They are the most over tag team in the Pacific Northwest that has never wrestled a match. And it's the one and only Cool Dad, Chris Ross, the Black Sheep, Dave Turner, the Bash Brothers, man. So I can't wait to get that one out, let you check it out. I'm really excited for it. And then, anyway, let's get to this week's show, because it's really a fun one. We've kind of stepped out of the Northwest just a little bit. I usually, you know, kind of stick things around here. People have wrestled here, people that are from here, you know, shows that are here. But this week, I got a great conversation, and I talk with the man who appeared in Dark Side of the Ring, playing Chris Benoit on that. You know, he's kind of blurred out and stuff, how they do those shows. Dude, his name's Tyson Dukes. And not knowing a lot about this guy, other than I saw him on this, and then I did some research on him, man. Like, this guy, he's had a really, really great career. I mean, he has wrestled for everyone, one place or another. You know, Ring of Honor, WWE, Impact. Like, you know, he's went to Japan, and so he's had a really great career. And we talk about a lot of that career, where he came from, growing up, training. He talks about the great Terry Taylor being a really like a role model for him, or like a mentor for him. And it was really fun, you know. And it also, it wasn't his first appearance on Dark Side of the Ring, so. Check it out, man. I hope you like it. If you like it, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your grandma, share it with them on social media. Tell them where to go check it out, because I think this podcast is really, really, really a good one. And, you know, I love all my podcasts, all my guests, but this one kind of stepped out of my realm just a little bit, because I didn't know as much about this person. So it was great. And I really enjoyed talking to him. Seemed like a great guy. I'd like to sit down, have a brew with him or something. He's also a great family man, it sounds like. So anyway, man, check it out. Appreciate it very much. So anyway, check out the podcast on our website, BigfootProWrestlingPodcast.com. You can check us out on all those things, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. There's probably other places. And then also over on SoundCloud as part of the Pro Wrestling Only Network. Anyway, I'm the L-Train, and you can find me on Twitter at BFPWPodcast. At BFPWPodcast, man. I'm the L-Train, and we're leaving the station. Hey, I've been telling you about Nacho Mamas for some time now. I love these nachos. I've eaten these nachos. They are the best nachos going today. And if you don't believe me after all this time, listen to what my friend Max has to say.
I'm here to hereby declare that Nacho Mamas nachos are the best nachos on the planet. I got the cheeseburger nachos, which are delicious. Also, my hair and beard are amazing. And then the wife got
Aloha
nachos, and they are also incredible, and they have pineapple on it. Crazy. Anyway, go support Nacho Mamas. They're incredible.
Oh yeah, best nachos on the planet. Take it from the man, Max himself. Let me tell you where they're going to be this coming week, starting May the 13th, which is Wednesday. They're going to be at 20022 South Danvers Road in Linwood from 5 to 7 p.m. doing shows to go. Friday, May 15th, the Hop and Hound in Bothell, 4 to 8 p.m. Saturday, 5-16, that's May 16, baby. Chuck's Hop Shop in Greenwood, 5 to 9 p.m. And then Sunday, May the 17th, Ridgecrest Public House in Shoreline, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. You know, they told you earlier, Max and his wife, about the Aloha nachos, about the cheeseburger nachos. I think those are staples that are on each and every week on that menu, which you can check out on their website that I'll tell you about in just a minute. Let me tell you about the specials. Smoked salmon nachos, Fontina cheese sauce, smoked salmon cream cheese dip, sweet bell peppers and green onions. And then we got a dark chocolate brownies with pomegranate cream cheese frosting, blueberry agua fresca. Hey, check them out each and every week where they're going to be. You can see and find that over at NachoMamasSeattle.com. That's Nacho Mamas Food Truck. Chris and Sandra, you guys are amazing. At Nacho Mamas SCA on Twitter. At Nacho Mamas Seattle, Facebook and Instagram. Hashtag nachos and beer. Hey, this is the L-Train, and my producer set up a really good one for us today, man. Talking to a guy, he's wrestled all over the place, all the companies, and he's recently appeared on Viceland on the Dark Side of the Ring documentaries as Chris Benoit. Tyson Dukes, man. How are you, Tyson?
Yo, yo, yo. Hey, what's up?
Not much, man. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for giving us your time today. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy, busy man these days. We're talking a little off the air. You got a bunch of little kids around there you got to take care of, scoop them up, clean them, put them to bed, all that kind of stuff.
So, I'm telling you what, like quarantine, I think quarantine is the opposite for me. Everybody's quarantined saying they're bored. I feel as though quarantine is the opposite where I'm way busier than I expected to ever be. So it's been a bit of a juggle, but it's been fun.
And hey, Tyson, where are we talking to you at right now? I'm down here in Auburn, Washington, way over here on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest. Where are you, sir?
I am in London, Ontario. So I'm just one of those, the center provinces of Canada, just 2 hours north of Detroit. And that's basically, if people don't know where in Canada that would be, that would be your best bet, is just go two hours north east of Detroit, and you would hit me right on the spot.
Oh, man. It was funny. I just did another podcast in the last hour talking to another couple Canadians. I don't know if you know who Scotty Mack is up here for ECC Dub, but I was talking to him and then one of his business partners, The Natural.
Oh, wow. You know what? Scotty Mack has been, we've never ever crossed paths. And like, I know Scotty's been at this a very, very long time, as well as I have. And it's neat to, you know, hear the names and see that he's still going and still trucking along, as am I. So it's kind of neat to hear about Scotty Mack. I've always known the name. I've seen pictures, of course, but never ever really crossed paths. Just always gone parallel. You know what I mean? That's the way it goes in this business.
Oh yeah, he's a great guy up there running ECC Dub. Does a, you know, probably a podcast or two with me every year for the last couple of years, and always good talking to him. He always invites me up as a guest for the show. So great, great guy there. So yeah, man, up there in Canada. So you born and raised in around that area you're at right now?
I was born and raised in the East Coast. So New Brunswick is the one of the furthest provinces over on the Atlantic Ocean side of things. And yeah, I grew up there, a small farm kid from a real small little community. And then when I was 18, decided that professional wrestling was my call of life. So I moved to Ontario and then never really went back. I've always been up here.
So man, speaking of being 18, you wanted to be a wrestler as you were growing up there. When did wrestling first start jumping into your life?
People have asked me that. Like, I've always had this recollection of, and I always tell people this story because it's kind of the neatest way to do it. Like, a lot of people sneak into arenas and they've watched it or they've met wrestlers on and stuff like that, and that's been their invite or their interest into pro wrestling. Mine was like growing up, I didn't get very much in the ways of stuff, you know. Like, life back then is a lot harder than it is today. There was less back then. You saved more, you didn't spend as much. But my mom, one weekend when she went for groceries, she brought me home a coloring book, and it was the Rockin' Wrestling coloring book. And it had Hulk Hogan and Hillbilly Jim and The Sheik and Roddy Piper on the cover. And I just remember I was just amazed by these giant brutish looking dudes that were like larger than life. And then from there, like, just being a kid with this coloring book, I just went on to see want to know what pro wrestling is. And then finally, I never had cable television until I was about 12. That's how rural I grew up. But like, I had friends that had cable, and they hooked me up. Then I got to watch wrestling for the first time, and I was blown away and never looked back. Never looked back.
So it sounds like maybe the family wasn't into it as much, but you had some buddies that were able to watch it and get it at their house and stuff then.
It just wasn't one of those things, you know. When you grow up small town, mm-hmm. rural, and in a farm community, it's all about work. I was always even as a little kid, you work so hard. So it just wasn't in their interest at the time, but it sure did captivate mine.
So when you and your buddies were checking it out, man, who were your kind of like the ones that stuck out to you, your favorites, the one that really grabbed you?
Well, you know, it always has to be like, you always got to give it to, because I'm a kid of the 80s, right? Born in 78. So you always got to give it to Hulk Hogan. Of course, as you dive into wrestling, you love your Macho Mans and your Ricky Steamboats and all these larger than like these great characters and like amazing wrestlers. But like Hulk Hogan was definitely the guy, as he was most people's guy back that early in the 80s. He was the guy that everybody wanted to, you know, he's the man. He was the man.
Definitely. I liked Hulk, but I was more of an NWA WCW guy, and I was a big Ric Flair fan, and I was so disappointed they didn't hook that up when they had them both in the WWE and or WWF in their prime. You know, they were going to do that one WrestleMania together, and then they switched it for whatever reason, so I was always disappointed we couldn't get those two hooked up.
You know what? It's very disappointing because being on the East Coast, we only got New York, right? Because New York is, we're above, like New Brunswick sits on top of Maine and Boston and like all these areas, Massachusetts and then New York, of course. But like, that's the way it's geographically, I guess. But we always got WWF. We never had the NWA. And it wasn't until I was like mid-teens where I could actually watch NWA stuff, and I love NWA. I love the work. I love the way they tell stories through pro wrestling. It was less character driven, more wrestling driven. And as I got a little bit older, man, oh man, that was the stuff that hit. I'm a huge, even still to this day, like I love Arn and Tully and Ronnie Garvin, and these guys are just bananas good. Even to the today's standards, I feel as though that they're still ahead of the curve. I think, in my opinion, that they were timeless back then, and they're still timeless today.
Oh yeah, and I love seeing those guys recently been showing up on AEW as managers for Cody and Tully. Excuse me, Tully with Sean Spears on there. So it's good seeing those guys back, you know, on TV, because those were some of my favorites. And I was talking to someone on a podcast here a couple. It might have been Rich Bocchini. But I was saying, you know, how weird was it to finally, since I was a big NWA guy, to see Arn and Tully one day show up as the Brainbusters on WWF television unexpectedly, because, you know, there was no internet back there to get the spoilers.
Right. When you finally, and what a treat, right? When Tully and Arn came in, and I remember, so they used to do, you know how they used to run the house show loop, and they did the house show loop in where I come from. So we drove about 2 hours to the big city. It's Moncton was the biggest city at the time. It's really small little city. But at the Moncton Coliseum, I watched my dad took me, and I watched, it was Andre the Giant. That was the marquee match. It was Andre versus Jake Roberts. Wow. And the other one that was on there was the Rockers and the Brainbusters. And it was like, a young 12, 13 year old kid. I was just so insanely mesmerized by that match, just the Rockers in the, and for my recollection now, it could be grander than I think because I was a kid, but like the amount of work that those guys put in on a little small East Coast house show was unbelievable. It was just an unbelievable match to watch that live. Just unbelievable.
Well, Arn was telling a story on the Arn podcast. I don't know if you ever get a chance to listen to that. He tells some good stuff on there, but pardon me. He was telling a story about they were wrestling, Jim Powers and somebody, and they were having this great match, you know, everyone selling each other stuff, and they got back through the curtain there, excuse me, and Torso, one of the Demolition guys, was waiting for him, and he chewed him out for giving those guys too much in a match. So I always thought that was a really good story that he told there, and because he got chewed out by one of the veterans that was already there for giving these other guys too much. He just went out there, he's like, no, don't sell nothing for him, take him out, da 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 da.
It's just, it wasn't their way. Like if you watch their, all their stuff is so, it's so neat to watch all their stuff. They would just, I just good for business. Those guys are just so good for business. And like to have guys try to even emulate that style now, this is the part that like is so impressive to me. Like you can't put on, like guys would have to work an insane amount of shows together to be able to put out what the Rockers and the Brainbusters had done together, or the Brainbusters could do with anybody, and put them on their level, was like, that's unbelievable. Like, that's every night, and being able to do that with anybody, that just shows like world class style wrestling that you can't even, like tag wrestling especially, you can't copy it. And the Revival, of course, is a very, very close competition for it, but like, my God, they have a blueprint to go off of. We're talking about the originators of this stuff. It's really impressive. Like, I could talk all day with you about that. Like, all those guys, because they're so good.
Well, yeah, and them, and then, you know, you talk about the Rock and Roll Express and the Midnight Express, and, you know, all those teams back there. They'd put each other over night after night, and they wouldn't even have the same match two nights in a row, right? It'd be a wholly different, totally different kind of thing for the fans.
Insane. And the sense of timing, like the timing is everything in professional wrestling. That's the hardest thing to learn. That's the hardest thing to practice, because it really comes down to like instinct and stuff like that. And it takes a long time to get a good sense of timing in this business. And we're talking about not just yourself against one opponent. We're talking about four guys, and usually a manager. For that sense of timing is insane. And to do it every night, like you said, was unbelievable.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was almost like artwork, the way they did it. And do you think that's because wrestling was, you know, 7 days a week and twice on Sunday back then, where, you know, now most wrestling's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, not so much during the week, maybe a Thursday show here and there, maybe. But it just seems like back then, you know, these guys were wrestling, you know, against each other for weeks and week at a time, 7 days, you know, so they would look so smooth.
You know what? I think that does play a role in it, most definitely. But I also think, too, today's wrestling is so, it's so overcomplicated. Like, guys have made this business so complicated in the hopes of having the quote unquote match of the night or match of the year, instead of just going out there and making the show great. They try to just steal a show every night. And it's sad, because it used to be a good thing. It's good competition to be the best, or want to be the best, and try to push each other to do better and stuff like that. But now it's gone the other way, where it's more of a hindrance, where guys don't know how to sell very much anymore. And it's all about as many combos and as many things as you can do. And like, you need a certain sense of like planning for even like wrestling holds. Like, you can't put a wrestling hold on and just, you know, work that hold anymore. You have to know how the guy has to position his feet and how he's going to roll over you into a certain other lock. And you know, it's lost the mystique of like how simple and how easy it should be, but how entertaining, because of their, like I said, like the sense of timing that's completely lost by today's generations of wrestling. It's really sad. It would be nice to see guys go back a little bit. And I'm not saying don't get over and don't make money, but I'm just saying, do it properly, do it within the realm of business, wait for your turn, wait for your time, kind of deal. You know, it's just one of those things. It's kind of frustrating to watch, because as I get older, maybe it's just because I'm the old guy and they're all new guys, but it was so much better when I was a kid, and it was so much better as I was starting in this business. And now it's just, I don't know, it's just complicated. I find it overly complicated and too sensitive and overcomplicated now.
Right. You know? Well, I still, you know, as a fan, I watch, enjoy it, but I still got that old school mindset. I kind of like it a little bit slowed down, a little more headlock and arm lock, a little longer, just to make the crowd kind of wait for what's going to come. But, you know, I'm a fan. I'm not a training person getting in the ring, so.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You are like, the thing is like, if you're the fan, you're the guy that's paying the money, and you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where like, the guy that's wrestling is the guy that either makes it super complicated and the fans are reacting, or he can keep it a good pace, a good solid pace, and like give them some real good action, but not overcomplicate everything, and they'd still get the same reaction. So like, and I've like, we have a lot of guys out there that will say it and will just still go out there and do the same thing. But we've made the business very, very difficult on ourselves. The fans haven't done it to us. We've done it to ourselves. We've made business harder on ourselves than it has to be.
Well, let's jump to when you're 18 and you decided that you had to do this, man. How did you get started on that? How did you find your training?
18 was a big year for me because I just decided that, you know, my parents wanted me to do something more professional, wanted me to be a cop, to be an RCMP officer. That's the police force up here in the north. And I couldn't see myself doing it. And just left home. I just said, hey, I gotta try this out. I gotta do this for me. And if it doesn't work out, I'll do whatever I can do professionally when I get home if I fail at this, with no intentions of ever coming home again. And I didn't really. I stuck it out. I went to Ontario. I found a school. It was the Hart Brothers School of Wrestling. It was not Bret Hart or Owen Hart run. It wasn't any of the like the Bruce Hart or Keith Hart. It was Smith Hart, and the Smith Hart didn't really run it. He was just the name on the school. He didn't. Oh. It wasn't even there. I think I met him once while I was there, and that was it. And so it was a little bit of a hard road, but it was one of those lessons learned early that you always got to keep your guard up, and you never know when someone's going to try to take advantage of you. And of course, I don't like to badmouth the school because it's still where I came from, but it was very unprofessionally run for a long time. And I was there about 9 months. I stayed there for about 9 months. I lived right there on the premise. And it was like, I was fortunate enough to have enough people come in and want to use the ring at the time, because rings weren't as excessive as they are now. Mm-hmm. You can't just find one in anybody's backyard. It was like one of those things where Edge and Christian, just before they got signed, they were using that ring. Joey Legend, who's a European star, he was there training for us for a little bit. I had a few guys that really made their mark in wrestling, just beat me up, and then you just learn through the bumps and the lumps and the bruises. And so that's basically where I started, was in this little school in Ontario that now is shut down. And I just went from there. I just continued to strive to do little independence and just kept going. It took me 2 years. 2 years before I ever received any kind of reimbursement for being on a show. I worked my first 2 years for free just to get out there, just to get myself going. So it just tells you the kind of drive and the kind of like stubbornness, I guess, that I had for this business, to get in this business and stick with it. Being the small guy, right? I'm only 5'8". So at the time it was really difficult because I'm a wrestler of the 90s. I started in the 90s. So it was nothing but giants. And of course, to get on any show, they're not going to let this little guy on the show unless there's some kind of reason why. So the reason why is because I was free.
There you go.
And I just built my own name that way.
Well, it's probably a good thing to do. I mean, in that 9 months, did you have enough to be, did you learn enough in that 9 months to be confident in a ring with somebody?
Yeah, you know what? I learned enough because I had enough people in there with me. Was I good? Not by any stretch of the imagination was I good. I never really got better at this thing until I met Scott D'Amore and started to work with Scott D'Amore and his promotion down in Windsor. He put me in a program for over a year with Terry Taylor, who was a free agent at the time. And Terry Taylor is one of my favorite wrestlers, and he's one of my favorite human beings. And he worked with me exclusively for a full year. Every month we had a match, and we worked that program. And I have never been as lucky and as fortunate, and just to get in the ring with him and have him beat me out for 10-12 minutes and just learn from that guy. I just like, the sky's the limit when it comes to Terry Taylor. I can't tell you enough good things about the man, because I think he's one of those guys that should have got more than he got, and he's just phenomenal in ring.
I thought Terry Taylor was an amazing worker back in the day, you know, before all that WWE and the Rooster and all that kind of stuff. But you know, when he was in NWA and UWF and those things, man, he was like the TV champ, I think, in UWF when it folded. And, you know, he did a lot. He was a really, really, really in ring, good, great in ring worker.
Oh my God. So he was so good in ring. Like, he just had such a mind for it. Like, his mind is so, and still sharp as a tack, right? Like, I coached a couple of years ago for WWE at the Performance Center. And of course, he's one of their head coaches there. And of course, it was like, he gave me a big hug. I didn't even see him. He just attacked me from behind. He gave me a big hug, and it was just great to be with him. And he's like, hey, when you're done coaching with, because I was working with Norman, I was Norman's assistant for the week. He says, when you're done here, my advanced class is starting up. So why don't you come in? And I did. I took the time to jump in and just hang out with him. And even still, after like 20 plus years of wrestling in this business, he was still teaching me stuff. Like, it just like little things, like grabbing a pin. He taught the guys, and I know that the War Raiders were in that, in his class, and there's a few other guys who were, like, great dudes. Biff or Oney Lorcan was in there. A lot of the guys that are still there now, and he taught this one class, and all it was over pins, so getting a pin and getting a pin properly. And he just emphasized how to pin hard and stuff like that. And I know that sounds very simple and very contrived, like, oh, that sounds silly. But, like, he just puts so much behind the psychology of just pinning your opponent. And one of his last drills was one of my favorite things. And I stole it, and I took it the next week. I was home, and I wrestled. And it was like, you pull a pin so hard, like you hit a guy with something great, and you pull that pin like you're trying so desperately to win that you actually roll him on top of you, and that's the cut, or that's the hope right there, is as he's rolling on top of you, he starts to get on you a bit. And I'm just like, blew my mind. Years later, this man's still teaching me stuff, and I'm ever so grateful for him.
Oh, man, that's great. He's just out there dropping that knowledge like that. That's awesome, man. Thanks for sharing that story. So from there, man, you've wrestled in a lot of places when I look you up here online, man. You know, some time in the WWE, TNA Impact, Ring of Honor, man. How did the WWE thing come into your life?
See, another great one in this business is Tom Pritchard. And Tom Pritchard was their guy that was in charge of getting enhancement talent. And I remember starting in 2000. So I started working with Terry for that year, and Terry said, you should start throwing your stuff into WWE. Here's the number. Mail them your video cassettes, because back then it was VHS cassettes. None of this, not even DVDs at the time. We were doing VHS. And I remember he told me little pointers on how to mail it in. Make sure that you mail it for to get there on a Tuesday, because Monday would be too busy, and there'd be so many VHS tapes stacked up there that nobody, he's just going to push them aside and he's not going to watch them. Said, start out on a, do it on a Tuesday, make sure it gets there on a Tuesday, and then call him after lunch because he'll be settled down, won't be so busy in the morning. Like, he gave me the blueprint how to go about getting booked. And so I did that. I did that from, I think from 2000, like early as 2000, I got the job to do enhancement work in 2002. So 2 years went by. I just sent them every month. I sent them one tape, and then I would call them on that Tuesday and just talk to them and see. And he gave me the pointers, and like, Tom was always gave me his time. He didn't have much of it, but he gave me what he had. And he just said, hey, work on this. Hey, get your body better. Hey, maybe get some new tights if you can, and stuff like that. And I just kept working and working and working. He says, well, I got a show in Toronto. You want it? I said, I do, sir. I do. And I went, and they had a little tryout thing off the start. And then that night I got picked to wrestle Sick Boy, because the merger had happened between WCW and WWE.
Oh, right about that.
And the sky has a limit. I worked there every month, man. I worked for 2 years straight from 02 to 04, I worked monthly with WWE as an enhancement talent.
Man, that must have been just so much fun, like going out there and, you know, being a part of the WWE show, you know, and just, that's got to be just an amazing feeling, even being backstage at those, at the pinnacle, right? Supposedly WWE is the top where it is.
Yeah, you know what? It is at the time. at the time, that's right. The place to be. At the time, like, there was no other real competition. WCW just got bought up. ECW was done, basically done in the water. And, like, it still had The Rock. And, like, you get to chum it up and eat catering with The Rock and change in the same dressing room as Triple H and Shawn Michaels, who were both active competitors at the time. One time I sat between the two of them, and we just I'm so focused on being the guy and wrestling and being the next guy and being a top guy. I didn't even really realize or soak all that in at the time. Is like I lived in a and wrestled in a good era of wrestling. Was the end of the Austin era, the beginning of the Rock era. It was a beautiful time, man. It was a great time. 2002 to 2004. I enjoyed my ride with them.
Man, I can almost hear the enjoyment in your voice as you talk about it, man. So, and it looks like from there, then you did some work with TNA Impact Wrestling.
I did, because Terry Taylor had made his way over to Impact.
Your man.
And through him and Scott Moore, who was that?
Oh, I said, that's your dude, man. That's your buddy, Terry Taylor.
That's my guy. He got me there. Like, he helped out, him and Scott Moore, who was a part of the company as well. And the two of us rocked it. They brought me in. I did Team Canada first, but I wasn't in any kind of shape to do Team Canada. Because I just blown out my knee and I came back and it wasn't looking or feeling real good about myself or any of it. But they brought me in a second time for Team International, and I signed a contract for 2 years. I did a 2-year contract with Impact at the time. I didn't see very much in the ways of work. And they let me out of my contract so I could go to Japan. But the time I was there, like, it's hard. It's a really hard because it's a small little company, and everybody's just digging and clawing to get somewhere. So it's hard for a new guy to come in, and they had no real direction for me. So they kind of like brought me in, got me a visa, and then just kind of let me out. And I just did my own thing. It just went. That's where I bounced over to Ring of Honor and over to Japan for 01, and then eventually All Japan for a little bit.
Oh, man, how was it working in Japan?
Oh, dude, it's the best. It's probably, if I could go back and finish out whatever is left of my career, that's the place I want to do it. That's the dream, is to finish my ride, and the last run would be for any company in Japan. I love it there. I love the people. I love the atmosphere. I love the culture. I love the food. And I especially love the wrestling. I love how it's a sport over there, and they still take it so seriously. I love it.
So, man, and you were doing that and a little bit of a Ring of Honor there. How was it working with the Ring of Honor folks over there?
Ring of Honor was one of those things where I was in at a like super great time. Adam Pearce was their booker and top guy for like booking people and storylines and all that stuff. He's a great dude. I love Adam Pearce to death. I got in there with him. I came in. I did one tryout match. He liked my stuff. He brought me in the next day, and I worked with Tyler Black, also known as Seth Rollins. And we had a great match. It was a nice little 13-minute little thing. It was really solid. And then from there, man, it just it was such a great place to work. Because it's all just young guys, super hungry, and had a different feel. It had a very Japanese style feel to it, but with very eager American guys just getting out there and just tearing up every night, and just they just gave it 100%, and it every one of them did. Like, no match on any of those shows was, we had Roderick Strong, you had the American Wolves, you had Kenny Omega was still there, just the Austin Aries, the who's who of pro wrestling now. And the talent pool was so huge. The only ones we didn't have was Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe was over at TNA, and AJ Styles was over there. But like we had just so much rich, solid talent back then for the company. It was hard, as in it was athletically very demanding, physically demanding, cardiovascular demanding. But like match setup wise, matches just. easy, just a breeze, if that makes any sense. Just to get up there and just wrestle with these guys, like they're all super athletes. It was so easy to work with. It was great.
So what's been going on, you know, before the everyone's been quarantined and all the wrestling shows have been canceled, and you just kind of been working on the independent scene lately, or?
Yeah, you know, I barely made it home. I was in Europe. I was in Germany and UK. I worked for WXW and then for PCW in the UK. And I just got home before they started shutting all these borders down and stuff like that. Like, I mean, the London airport coming home was insanely, like, quiet. Like, this is a major airport and there's nobody there. So everybody who's just trying to, if they were venturing to get home, that's all they were doing. There was no outgoing flights. So anybody from the UK wasn't getting anywhere. So it was one of those things where I was like, oh, geez, am I even going to get home? So, like, we just, like, I had so much work this year was so full. Like, I had so much stuff after March coming home from Europe. It was going to be a very, very busy year. I was super excited and stoked to get out and do, like, I was finally going to be on the West Coast working in BC. I was just, like, I was bouncing everywhere from BC to Newfoundland and back home. And just, it was great. But then, of course, the virus kind of put a damper on everything, and so like I don't have a booking until I think the one that I have, these guys, and these guys aren't for sure, they're just saying if everything gets back to normal, I think my next two shows are in August. One is in New Brunswick and then the other one would be in the United Kingdom again. So now, you know, with quarantine, you're just kind of sitting around twiddling your thumbs and chasing kids down. That's all you're doing.
Well, you know, speaking of that show you were talking about, it looks like Road to Glory tournament. The guy that you wrestled in the quarterfinals has been on this show a couple times. His name is Daniel Maccabi, and I'm a big fan of his. Have you wrestled Daniel before you met him there?
No, that's the first time we've ever got the chance to wrestle. A great guy, great technician. He's a real good grappler. It was fun to finally get to that. Like, again, like, you know, these names, from like all these different places, but you just run parallel where they're running one area and you're in the other area. And when you switch it, like, you never, ever meet. And we finally got to wrestle in the UK, which is funny. Two Canadian boys. I have to wrestle in England to get it done. But it was fun. He's a great dude, man. I really enjoy that dude a lot. It was fun to actually get in there and wrestle with him.
Yeah, I've had a couple of great talks with him. He's a really nice guy, big into music, and I've seen him live quite a few times here at Without a Cause and 3-2-1 Battle and things like that. So, yeah, I saw that. I was like, that's the last match you wrestled, or one of the last matches you wrestled against Daniel. That was so cool. Good to see a familiar name from the area here. But dude, let's get to it. Let's talk about it. And how did this appearance on Dark Side of the Ring come about for you?
Now, if you take a look at the whole Dark Side of the Ring TV series, is like phenomenal TV. First of all, mm-hmm. But season one, the pilot episode, I'm actually on the pilot episode playing Dutch Mantel, which is great because I love Dutch.
Playing Dutch, wow!
So I'm on that pilot episode. What's that?
Oh, I was just, when you mentioned Dutch, I was like, oh man, that's cool. You got to play him. I didn't know that.
Yeah, man. I had a giant beard at the time, and I was cast as Dutch. They based out of Toronto. So I don't, like, one of the guys through the independent scene dropped my name, probably because of my big beard at the time, said, hey, he might do the trick. And so I just got to know these guys, Jason, the director, and producers Evan, and they're just like phenomenal cool dudes. They're really cool dudes and they're super talented and had such a great vision for this show that, like, if, like, you just want to watch every one of, like, you can just crush all episodes in one night, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where you just one more
exactly,
and you go through them because it makes, even if you're not a wrestling fan, you'll love the show, right? It's just so, it's good TV. So when Chris Benoit came up, they told me they were looking for guys, and they asked me, because I run my own school here in London, and they asked me if I had anybody that could play different roles. And then I said, I gave it to them. And they're like, honestly, Ty, we really just want you to play Chris. We were hoping that you would just like accept the role of Chris Benoit. And I just kind of chuckled. I'm like, of course. They're like, I would love to do it with you guys again. I didn't know if they didn't want to do that. But since it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a dream sequence. It's kind of foggy. It's kind of dark. You really can't see your face or anything like that. It's there's no issue with me playing multiple roles. So they're like, we want to give you the Chris Benoit role. It'll be a two-part thing, and we're going to keep it very respectful. We're trying, like, because it's such a harsh topic and it's very gory in a lot of cases. It's an ugly situation. Right. We just want you to know that it's not going to be like that. We're kind of keep it as professional as possible. And they did. And it was great. It was great. It's great TV, and it was great to be a part of it. And I would take a lot of pride in the two episodes playing Chris Benoit.
Well, those two episodes were amazing. It was great because they dropped the first one on a Sunday night, you know, ahead of time on YouTube, so you could check that one out and then watch the next one on Tuesday night when it came. So I really loved that. But was there any apprehension on your part at all just because of the story that, you know, it turns into?
Now, growing up, I was a Chris Benoit guy. So in my teenage years, when I finally did decide to become a professional wrestler, it's because I loved Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit has always been my guy. I love his style. I've emulated his style a lot in my work. I do a lot of Benoit's, not his signature stuff, but a lot of mannerisms are kind of the same. And that's why Jason and Evan wanted me to do it as well, because they could see that I already know, right? I know how to portray the guy, because that's the guy. He was my hero in wrestling in my teenage years, getting into this business. Apprehensive? No, I wasn't. I was excited about playing him because I never really try to focus on the personal, because it's horrible and it's a terrible situation, and it, like, I wish it never had happened. And like, if you were going to take somebody, just take yourself and be done with it. I understand, like, you know what I mean? I get it. Like, I'm not defending the actions of a broken man. Mm-hmm. However, he was broken. There was something broken inside him, obviously, to do such horrific acts. But the professional, the guy, the worker, the wrestler, that was my guy. So not apprehensive at all. And I did talk to them, and they were very upfront about telling me how the scenes were going to be laid out when they talked about the end days, the few last days that he was living. And so even with that being a little uncomfortable and just kind of like, oof, every scene we talked that stuff over, and we just went to work, and it was just makes for better TV. I think it just, if you're a little uncomfortable and you have to throw yourself in there a little bit like that, I think it actually helps a bit. And it was good. It was a good time.
The two episodes were completely amazing. My wife and I sat here speechless just watching them the whole time. And, you know, one of my favorite pieces of it was the people that were a part of it. You know, because sometimes there's these shows and they get people to comment on it, but those people aren't really a part of stuff. The people that were on this show talking, Chavo Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Vicky Guerrero, and I think Dean Malenko, I mean, those were the perfect people, I think, to be on this show and talk about him, because they were all so close with him, you know, him and Eddie Guerrero, the friendship that show just showed us, you know, was phenomenal, man. I thought that was amazing. Did you ever get a chance to talk to any of these folks while you were working on this show?
Now, I know Chavo. Like, me and Chavo have wrestled in WWE together on, like, Velocity. We've had a Velocity match. I got close to Chavo while I was working there. And so they were like on scene, which was great. Like, when it came to the acting part, they did their part in the comfort of their own home. And then they left, they never crossed the two. So they never put the people in, like, that they interviewed in, the way of reliving a scene like that again. I think that was super cool on their part. Mm-hmm. But I did talk to Chavo when this was all done, and I got to see Chavo's interview, and when they discussed holding on to Eddie as Eddie passed away, mm-hmm. like that whole scene where he was, and like he broke in the interview, and it just tore me apart, because I told him, I messaged him, and I said, hey, I know I've said sorry and condolences in the past, but like, I didn't know. I had no idea, but I did know. You know what I mean? It's one of those situations where you just don't know until you see a man's eyes and see how deeply affected he was by Eddie's passing. It broke me right there. Like that, there was such a great scene, where he's holding him in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And of course he's breaking down in the interview part. It's just, it made it very, very real again for me. So I made sure that I messaged him, like, dude, I just wanted you to know that I love you. And I really appreciate like all that you did on the show. Cause like that takes real guts to relive that again. You know, that was a tough scene, and it got me. So I had to let him know. It was crazy.
Well, I'll let you know as a fan at home, who, you know, don't know any of these people personally, just what we see on TV, read on the internet, all that stuff, you know. Me and my wife were definitely cutting onions that night, man. The story was sad. It was amazing. It was that thing. It was just an emotional roller coaster ride, I should say.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, it was hard to take in. It was hard to take in, but it was still enjoyable in the same sense. And they left it on such a positive note. Because that whole two-part series right there is so much negative involved. There's so much sadness and negativity and death involved, that when they got to the other side of it and it was about a positive moment between David and Sandra, mm-hmm. it was such a touching moment where Jericho brought them back together and they were at a wrestling show together and enjoying their time. Mm. Was just... it was a perfect way to cap that off. You know, it's just a perfect way to end such a miserable, miserable ending that it could have been. And they really flipped it into a good thing.
And I thought the way, you know, Chris Jericho looked after his son after he was gone and helped him out and all that kind of stuff. It again shows what kind of person I think Chris Jericho is. Every time you hear about this guy, he's doing great stuff for people, helping out, and you know, to see him maybe one of the few people that looked after that guy, I mean, it just completely showed how just a caring person he is.
Yeah, you know what, Chris Jericho, Cody Rhodes, a lot of these guys in that AEW promotion now, you have to give them like top respect, because they're like they say, they're all elite, but they don't act like all elite. They take care of people, or they use their way of being elite in a good and positive way, and that's why it's a beautiful thing to watch that company start to grow, because hopefully it does just takes off and never just ground running, because they're just, it's a different kind of vibe, different kind of feel, and just different kind of people with a humble attitude. I love it.
And after you did the show, did you get a pretty good positive reception of people on how the show went?
Yeah, you know what? For the most part, I've had nothing but super positive feedback. And a lot of people have, you know, really said how much they enjoyed it and how much the show really spoke to them in the ways of like how negative, but how positive it turned out to be. You know, you're always going to get your negative people, and anybody wants to throw out their opinion, and that's fine. It's fun to chuckle at more than anything, especially when you're always, like you mentioned, like I mentioned, like I, like Chris was my, like my hero growing up. And of course people like, oh yeah, of course, preaching that like a serial killer is your hero. You know, how sick are you? I mean, people are just, got way too much time in their hands, but yeah, for the most part, you know, very, very well received.
Yeah, the negative people, they're just trolls that are just negative on anything, that don't really, you know, they don't really give a crap anyway, so screw them. I thought it was great. But did you ever get a chance to meet Chris Benoit?
Yeah, you know what, because I was there 02 to 04 is like a big time for Eddie Eddie was there and Chris was there. And like anytime I was there monthly, I was there every month working both Raw and SmackDown as enhancement, so much so that I had my own entrance music. That's how much I was used there. It was quite a bit, right? So like at the time, this enhancement guy that everybody thought was under contract, and I was still freelance, just, you know, in there with everybody wrestling. And Chris was always one of those guys. Like, I have a story of Chris. I wrestled La Resistance. It was me and Bobby Roode wrestling La Resistance on Sunday Night Heat. And so we wrestled, put on this match, and it went well. Like, it was okay. It was a good enhancement match. I come to the back. Everything's fine. The next day at SmackDown, because they would play both Raw and SmackDown, the previous SmackDown, they would play it on at catering. So it's on the little TV screen, and Chris watched my match, and I didn't ask him to. I didn't ask him to do anything. Like, I left, and Chris is watching my stuff, and then he came. It took him like over an hour to come find me, but he took the time to look for me, found me, and like sat me down, and he broke it down for me, like what I could have done better, what he thought he enjoyed about it and stuff like that. He took the time out of his busy schedule to just to tell me, like, hey, you know, work on this, make this better, you know, you're doing great, and like I love seeing you out there. Just a super pro, like just a very serious guy, but gave you time. And so I used to sit with him in the dressing room, and then he'd be flipping through these 8x10s. He was supposed to pick one, and of course he said, hey, which one would you pick? If you're like, Ty, which one do you like? And I just sit there with Chris Benoit, like my guy, and go over these 8x10s and like discuss which one he should use. And of course, me being not taking anything like too seriously at the time, would say, why are you wearing, because he was wearing his purple tights, and I hated the purple tights. I'm like, why are you wearing the purples? You should, like, why aren't you taking pictures in the red ones? The red ones are the ones that, that's the one I grew up with. That's what I'd like to see. You know what I mean? So just a good dude. Just a really good dude. And I was there. I went back for another enhancement after I blew out my knee in 04. I went back and I did an enhancement job in 2007. Now, 2007 is around the time that is the year that he passed away. And I was on 2 weeks or a week or 2 weeks before he did pass away. And so I remember coming up to him, hey Chris, you know, I haven't seen you in forever, I hope everything's good, like it's good to see you again. And the man was not the same. And like, looking back in hindsight, obviously there was something wrong, something was messed up, but at the time I just thought he was just having an off day, or like it didn't really strike anything with me. But like 2 weeks, I think it was, before he passed away, I sat with him like at catering, and it was just, he wasn't the same dude. He was not the same human being that I remembered from my time there in those 2 years. So it's sad. It's a sad situation. It's sad that you can't catch the signs. You know what I mean? You just think guys are having an off day or an off week or whatever. You just, and by the time you get to that point, it's too late. You know what I mean? So it's sad. It's a sad spot.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, the science is starting to pick up a little bit where they can, you know, maybe start scanning people's heads ahead of time and figuring some of this stuff out, you know. But it is sad, you know, but it was nice that you got to meet the real Chris Benoit, you know, before that. So good for you. You got to meet a wrestling hero from your past, so good for you. Dude, if anyone wants to follow you on social media, how do you do that?
This is the easiest thing ever, because I've had to make it easy, because I'm not a social media. I'm not a tech guy by any stretch of the imagination. I'm a caveman that's in his 40s now. So the best way to get a hold of me is through like Twitter or Instagram, are my favorite things in the world, because I post everything on there. Has all the info for my next show, when there's a next show coming up. And that's all under Tyson Dukes. Dukes is spelled D-U-X. And you can find me just on those two platforms. And they're opened up for messages. If you want to send me a message asking questions or whatever, I got if I got time, which I do have time, I don't mind, you know, saying hi or, you know, answering any kind of questions or whatever, or have interest in wrestling training or anything like that, I'm right there for you. So just hit me up there.
And you still taking bookings, and will they get you a hold of you the same way there?
Yeah, that's it. That, like, everything is so easy, right? Just try to keep it as simple as possible. Yeah, just message me on there, and my email's on there as well on both platforms. So you can email me if you want to make a direct message, and I will definitely get you back. And then once this madness is cleared, I will definitely be at any event that's coming up.
Hey, there's a lot of promoters out here in the Pacific Northwest, and they might even listen to this. You never know. Maybe we could see you out here someday. But, dude, you got any merchandise you're selling these days?
All my merchandise, same thing. It's all through the same stuff. It's I got t-shirts, I got sweaters, I got hoodies, I got a plethora of stuff. I got so much stuff, and like, of course, nothing's moving right now. But like, I'm hoping in the next couple months everything starts to get back to normal. Hopefully everybody feels better, everything gets well, and then we can go back to normal. And and if you want stuff shipped out, I am not a sick man, I'm healthy as a horse. So if you want stuff, just message me through there and I will send you some stuff. Easy as that.
All right, Tyson. Hey, before we let you go, any final thoughts that you want to give out before we head out for the evening?
Man, I just appreciate you. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I know I'm very long-winded. I talk a lot. But yeah, no, man, it was great. It was great to be a part of this. And I'd like to, one of these days, we're going to have to meet up on the West Coast for sure.
Definitely, man. And hey, thanks so much for your time. And hopefully the kids are down for the night. You can get a little relaxation in there, some adult time. And man, thank you so much. Have a great evening, and good luck with everything.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
This episode recorded at the Bigfoot headquarters. This has been a Swagamore production.